Welcome to the History Reviewed channel, where we analyze the lies and deceptions of history. I want to discuss this concept of the empire of the white race. And you'll notice in my title that I put the white European race. There are many things about whites currently where whites are feeling very despondent. They're looking at population statistics, they're listening to GDP of China, and whites in South Africa, whites in America, whites in Europe, everybody's so depressed, and they say there's no future for our race. We used to be, just over a century ago, white people made up 25% of the world's population. Now we're down to about 9% or so, and everybody is depressed, and they say everything is lost, it's all over, and the only end result is Jews and blacks and anyone else who's an enemy of the whites, overcoming the whites, destroying the whites, etc. And people are so despondent over so many aspects of our existence. But I view the world very differently as a result of my own life experiences and as a result of my studies of history and politics. And I especially like military history. And the way that I view things after my various studies is completely and utterly different. And I'm also starting to realize that maybe there are a couple of concepts that I have in my head that other people have not really considered. But everything requires a lot of explanation. There's much that I have to tell. And I need to explain things in their proper context. In this particular video, I'm not going to discuss race and IQ. I'll just make short mentions of them. But in this video, what I'm really going to focus on is territory. And I'm going to focus on territory as a critical aspect of whites. And in this and in other videos, I want to come and point out specifically the strengths of whites. What makes whites unique? What has allowed whites to attain and achieve the things that they've achieved? One thing that I've come to the conclusion of in my trips to America, Canada, and Holland is that white people do not appreciate themselves. White people take for granted their own achievements. They completely take their own achievements utterly for granted. And then they also just assume that everybody else is capable of exactly the same. All of this is erroneous, it's wrong, it's total junk. And we need to go back to the drawing board. We need to start from the beginning. So what I want to discuss in here is the empire of the white race. Now, nobody has ever discussed such a thing, so I'm going to introduce this to you, and I'm going to explain to you why this is important and what comes from this concept. A very important political principle that I like is a term that has come into being in recent years. It's called pan-European nationalism. It is like a globalist grouping of whites around the idea of the nation state. The nation state is itself something that whites have brought to a high level of specialization and achievement. Now the entire world is filled with nation states. Even Africa, where blacks never had nation states. They didn't even know what those things were. They were tribal. Now everybody's got a nation state. But for the prior 1,000 years, nation states was really a European invention. And nation states were almost ethno states because they focused on, let's call it, the tribes of the white race. I like the term tribe because whites used to be tribes. Tribes later more or less became nations. And I still think the concept of tribe is very valid for whites. And I've noticed the concept of tribe in Africa, and the two concepts are very similar. And tribe generally leads to a nation state. Anyhow, I want to just touch also on the topic here of our race. You'll see that I've called it the white race, and then in brackets I put European race. When I was a kid in Rhodesia, and also when I came to South Africa, I noticed that the forms that you filled in, when it asked about your race, the race was described as European or African. Here in Africa, we spoke about the blacks as being African and ourselves as being European. This is even true in Rhodesia, where most of the people were British. We spoke about the term of Europeans. We are Europeans. I think even in America, that term also existed in the same way. But nowadays, there's the concept of white. And white is interesting because white is almost like a mixture of European. So in Europe, you've got these tribal nations. You've got Germans, French, Italian, Spanish. And you could say that these are tribes. And these tribes have got their territories. Maybe they've haggled and fought over exact boundaries, but they've got more or less established territories that are pretty much firmed up. And pretty much everyone accepts most of the outcome. But the whites in those territories prior to the age of globalization tended to stay in their territories. In fact, DNA analysis of whites across Europe and Britain and everywhere has shown that people are so tied to their physical location that there are people who've lived in the same location for thousands of years, that you can show that somebody who lives in that area now, that their DNA physically is similar to DNA from 1,000 years, 2,000 years, 3,000 years ago. White people are very much tied to location, very tied to location. But I want to talk about white, because white seems to me, it appears to me, I'm not totally sure if my assessment is correct, but white appears to me to be a creation of Europeans who left Europe. So inside Europe, at one point in time, they even used to talk about the French race and the German race, which is actually not strictly correct. And then later, you'll find that in places like America, I think the term may have evolved. I think the term may have evolved in America and South Africa, that people came to be called white. There was also a movement in South Africa to change us from being viewed as Europeans, because Boers wanted to show that they were tied to the African soil. So then the argument became, I'm not a European, I'm an African, but I'm a white African. You know, why can't an African be white? I was born here, my father was born here, my grandfather was born here, my great-grandfather was born here. So you now had new identities of whites. But the whites who came here, although they came from similar countries, like in South Africa, the Boers are 40% Dutch, 40% German, 20% French. And so these people mixed into a group. The mixture of whites outside of Europe has been much greater. The people of the United States are people who come from all across Europe, and they've completely mixed, and they've turned into, let's call it, the white race. So they've lost their European roots in terms of that I'm a German, I'm French, I'm Italian, or they know about it, but they are physically bonded and interbred into each other. And you could say that the mixing of the tribes of Europe has resulted in this terminology called white. And white was good up to a point. Then white starts becoming a problem, and it's allowed Jews to have a field day with us and to start messing with us. Because you do get whites, you'll find that the whites are basically in Central Europe and Northern Europe. These are, let's call it, the purest whites. But then the moment that you get to boundaries, you get to the Iberian Peninsula, Spain, Portugal, the Mediterranean areas, the people up there by Finland, Hungary, you'll find that the whites who are on the edges of Europe have themselves slightly interbred with other peoples. So their DNA is slightly different. So you get the Hungarian who's got some Asian in him. You've got the Finns who've got some Asian. You'll find that probably the people who interbred the most were the Portuguese, and they've got a darker skin. And people in the center of Europe do refer to some of these people as brown people, just because of the very slight difference in skin color. And the use of this concept of white has problems. And I think that in recent months, I've been thinking intensely about this concept of calling us white. And I'm thinking that for many, many purposes, we should revert to the use of the term European. Because white allows the Jew, the liberal and the communist and assorted bags of shit, to then start playing games. And then they start showing different people and they say, oh, is this really a white person? And blah, blah, blah. And, you know, what's the difference between white and black? And, you know, where does the one end? You know, because now they start looking at thousands of shades of gray. You know, and now they're starting to play games and they're starting to look for weaknesses. And really, race is valid because at the bottom of this is the concept of European and that we are physically descended from each other. In fact, if you go back in science, it is even possible that our forefathers in ancient times might even not have been white-skinned. And I'm not talking about the from Africa theory. I'm thinking in terms of whites who may have existed tens of thousands of years ago before there was even the Ice Age. It is possible, it is technically possible that we could have had darker skin at one point or another. So we mustn't be hung up on skin color. The Aryans were definitely white, and we know that they existed thousands of years ago, but we don't know what we were like 90,000 years ago. And it is possible that 90,000 years ago we might not have been completely white. I'm not sure of the facts. So the key thing for me is that we mustn't get hung up on color. What we must focus on is our common heritage and that we are bonded by blood. We are physically interbred with each other. We come from the same roots. We come from the Caucasus Mountains. And even another study done by scientists showed that everybody who lives in Europe is related to a group of whites who lived in what is now Belgium 35,000 years ago. Everybody is related to them. And of course, if we go back to the Caucasus Mountains, all of us are descended from those people. So we are merely a people who come from a common root, a common ancestry. And we've traveled and we've settled different places, and sometimes we've interbred a little bit differently. But we mustn't let these slight differences get in the way of the bigger picture. And I think European is much more accurate, and I think European has got a political value for the future as well, in that there's a case that I still want to make about the critical importance of Europe. Europe as an entity and as a entity of progress, the likes of which our race has never known, and which even those of us who live outside of Europe should be thankful for, grateful for, and willing to support. So I'm beginning to think that the term European is the most accurate term for us and should be the one that we should be using. We can use the term white, but we must not get hung up on white as a color and the weaknesses of the term white and thinking that we're only talking about color. Because this also confuses us now with Jews. Jews are white as well. Many Jews are white. Not all Jews are white, but many are. And if we rather stick to the term European, then there is no such problem. Furthermore, by saying European, we should also stress that race is a problem of inheritance, and that we are linked together by inheritance. We have a common heritage. Our forefathers are the same. So I think that European race is actually a more accurate term to use. But for the purposes of simplicity, I will continue to talk about whites, but I will always refer back to the fact that I think that European race is more important, and it gets rid of lots and lots of other problems. So let us talk about us as the white or European race and our empire. Nobody ever talks about our empire. Though I have discovered in my own searches, when I began to think about us as having an empire, I began to realize that other whites too have started asking the same question. They've begun to put two and two together and they've said, if we are white, which countries and regions do we control? And you'll be astounded to find that nobody's drawn up maps. Scientists themselves, historians themselves, have amazingly not drawn up accurate maps of the territory that we inhabit right now. But other people have, and the end result is pretty good, and I'm very impressed. So I want to go into this to explain why I'm interested in this. The last leader of South Africa, the last white leader of South Africa, was this fellow you see here, Frederick Willem de Klerk, F.W. de Klerk. We in South Africa often used the initials of the Prime Minister or the President. So we used to talk about PW being PW Botha and FW being FW de Klerk. So this F.W. de Klerk, here's a stupid quote from him. He says, "Peace does not fare well where poverty and deprivation reign. does not flourish where there's ignorance and a lack of education and information. Total rubbish. He's talking absolute garbage. I'm not going to waste my time with the nonsense he's talking. I just want to show you this man's face. This was the last leader of the country, and he told us something right at the end before he handed this country over to the blacks. He told the whites of South Africa that the correct lesson to draw from Rhodesia, which is where I come from, which is now Zimbabwe, he said that the correct lesson to draw from Rhodesia is that in the end, no matter how much you fight, you have to negotiate with the enemy. In other words, you are doomed to defeat by military efforts, that at the end of the day, you must negotiate with the enemy. This leads to the next result, which is that the only path forward for all whites in South Africa is that you must deal with the non-whites. You must integrate with them. Any problems you have, any issues you have in terms of how you want to progress, you need to negotiate with these blacks. So the blacks now become a bottleneck. The blacks become a bottleneck because everything you do, you've got to go through them. They are now the new official body. And they are communists, actually. And they are determined to hold on to power. They're determined to cling to power. I've studied this intensely. I will come back to this topic. I'm not going to spend time dealing with this thing. But when I looked at this, I began to realize that we need other friends. We need to do something else. We need a strategy that's going to work for us, man. We need something that's going to work. And then I began to start thinking along the lines of, initially I was talking to liberals, I was talking to Jews, and with time I found out that a white liberal is your enemy. And then I discovered that the Jew is a racial nightmare, a permanent enemy of whites, utterly deceptive. You cannot deal with Jews in any way, shape, or form. So if you can't deal with white liberals, you can't deal with Jews, who the hell can you deal with? And I began to realize that the only true friends we have are other common white people in the rest of the world. And then I began to turn to Europe and look at Europe and America. And that was how I slowly began to think in broader and broader terms. And then I began to realize, and it hit me, that we are a part of something much bigger. So then the question in my mind was, how big is this thing that we are a part of? Is this thing big enough and strong enough that we can align with it, that we will be able to survive in the future if we work with this bigger entity, the white race? Here is another stupid quote from South Africa. This comes from a guy called Albert Luthuli or Luthuli, one of the blacks who lived here in South Africa in the ANC. And here he says, "I believe that here in South Africa, with all our diversities of color and race, we will show the world a new pattern for democracy. There is a challenge for us to set a new example for all. Let us not sidestep this task." Total hogwash, utter rubbish. I'll show you later on that the basic plan for South Africa all along, going back to 1928, was a black communist republic. End of story. And that is what South Africa is today. All this kind of cheap talk, this is just junk. This is rubbish, man. F.W. de Klerk, in this quote here, F.W. de Klerk says there, "For many years, I supported the concept of separate states." So for a large part of his life, he did believe in apartheid. He did believe in the concept of separate states. And it was just towards the end of his life, when he became the president, that he began to lose his mind and lose his sanity. And then he goes on with and does all the impossible, stupid things. He's close to Jews, liberals, and just assorted human garbage that came out of the rest of the Western world. Here is the same F.W. de Klerk standing next to the Jewish scumbag Soros. There are two scumbags, and that'll give you some kind of idea of the kinds of people he associated with and the deals he struck once he lost his mind. So this is just some background as to how I became interested in the concept of the white race and the power of the white race. I've always been a student of European history. To me, European history is the most exciting history. It is the history that represents the most progress. Despite the wars, I love European history, and I always did, and it fascinated me. So let's discuss territory, because territory is the critical issue here. Here is a book that somebody wrote, and you can see it's related to National Socialism, and it's called Blood and Soil. And the concept of blood and soil is a concept that was sort of racial, and it started in the 19th century. And the concept of blood and soil had to do with the people in an area, let's say like Germany. Those people are first and foremost related to each other by blood. And secondly, the next thing that defines them is the soil, the area where they live. And like I've said, whites have lived in same places for hundreds and in many cases thousands of years. White people do not move around a lot. So the concept of blood and soil also ties into farmers and the power of the farmer and the influence of the farmer on society, on civilization, on nations. In fact, some of our greatest civilizations, like the Greeks and the Romans, came from farmers. The original Greek army was an army of farmers. The original Roman army was an army of farmers. And it seems to me that right through to the present period, that many of the strongest people in our society, the most determined people, are actually people who come from a rural setting. There's something about the rural setting that makes you different. I myself grew up on a farm, even though I actually wasn't your normal farm boy. I actually like to read books and things. But I grew up on a farm, and I quite enjoyed the lonely nature of the rural life. I liked it. It fitted in well with me. I was not a party animal. I did not really like being around lots of people. I was more somebody who was quiet and happy by himself. And perhaps in a certain way, I fitted in quite well with the farm without really realizing it. So blood and soil is a concept that's been used in that way. And the Germans, here's the German term for it, it's Blut und Boden, I think. So this is the kind of concept that was doing the rounds in Germany and in, let's say, the racial time of Europe, as everybody began to think in terms of race. But I've come to another conclusion about blood and soil. And I actually thought, when I first heard the term blood and soil, I originally thought that my definition, let's call it, of blood and soil is actually what it means. And then upon a bit of investigation, I realized, no. Blood and soil is, as I've described to you, it's farming, it's heritage. It's actually not what I'm about to tell you. I'm very interested in military history. I love military history. And when I studied the whites of Southern Africa and our struggles, we are a people who came here and we physically colonized the place. Just like the whites who went to America, Australia, Canada, New Zealand, Just like those whites and even the whites of South America, we are a people who came here and we may have fled from Europe for whatever stupid reasons our forefathers decided to leave. Some left due to being religious nutcases, others left because they wanted some freedom, others were genuine explorers and interested in new territories. They didn't just want to stay in one place. We are an expanding, exciting people. But one thing about us that is totally common is that when we move around, we like to dig our roots into a place. And even when we left Europe and we went to other places, we immediately sunk our roots into the ground like a tree. And we stay firm. So although we explore and conquer, we then put on our roots and then we stay stuck there. So that is our soil component and even our blood component, because we come from the same background. But there is a twist to blood and soil that I've never seen anybody discuss, and yet I think it's the most important argument regarding blood and soil. And it is the argument that if you live as a group together and you defend your territory together, that this nation state, because that is what we eventually form, that this concept of blood and soil, that is the nation state, that you will find that when whites sink their roots into the ground and they create a nation state in this blood and soil area, and they then fight in this area and defend this area, that they have a tremendous power. That when they actually physically colonize a place and they hold on to that place, they really dig their roots into this place and they hold on to this place for all that they're worth, you will find that whites have got an amazing power to defend their roots. At its greatest, you can see it with the Germans in World War II. You can see that the Germans not only defended their territory, but that it took the Soviet Empire, the American Empire, the British Empire, all of world Jewry to come and smash 70 million people in their own territory. You needed almost the entire world to attack them in order to defeat them. And even so, it was very close run thing. That 70 million people could stand up to maybe seven or more times their population. And it took a lot to bring them down. The same is true for the Boers. The Boers were maybe 1.5 million people. And when the British Empire, prodded on by the Jews, the Rothschilds and assorted Jewish scum in England, decided that it's time to conquer the Boer territories because there was so much gold and diamonds there, you'll find that the Boers, as a population of men, women and children, were around about 1.4, 1.5 million people. But the British needed to bring in almost 500,000 troops in order to conquer this tiny territory. They had to bring in almost as many white males from across the empire as the total number of white males who lived here. They even exceeded probably the grand total of white males who lived in this territory, because these white males were so determined to hang on to their territory at all costs. And you can go on and on and on and look right throughout history. You'll see that whether it's the ancient Greeks, whether it's the Bulgarians, whether it's the Spaniards, the Portuguese, whether it's the Swedes, you will see time and time again the power of the nation state. This, when the nation state is founded on blood and soil, you'll see the unbelievable power of the nation state at that time. And when I look at colonial times and the race wars, and I specifically refer to my lecture, 50 Years of Race War in Southern Africa, when I look at us here in Southern Africa And the way that we fought, even though here we now had large numbers of blacks among us, but we still ruled them. If you look at the way that we defended our terrain, being as few as we are, because never at any time did the whites of Southern Africa exceed 5.2 million people. Never did it exceed 5.2 million people. Yet we controlled an enormous territory and we fought against tremendous odds. And I'm convinced now that even from our recent experiences, that every time that whites put their roots down in a place on any continent, under any conditions, whether it is ice and snow, or whether it is the warmth of Africa or wherever, that you will see the power of whites when they dig their roots in and they function as a blood and soil entity. And that in actual fact, the real power of blood and soil at the end of the day is military. That when whites function in this way, they pack a big military punch in their region. And this is at the heart of what I'm about to show you. So now there are whites who say to me, okay, we in America, we're going to be outnumbered, and the non-whites are going to outnumber us. Soon we're going to be less than 50% of the population. We're so screwed. We're going to be dead. It's over. I'm going to make a very simple proposal to you here. And the proposal is the following one. That in any territory on earth where whites live, where whites are 51% or more of the population, that if there were to be a race war right now, and the whites had to fight as a group, and they had to fight against the other non-whites that coexist with them, that if the whites are 51% or more of the population, that it will be a given that the whites will win that war and seize that territory. That is the basic proposal I'm going to make to you. That assume that globally, right now, immediately, all whites across the planet are forced into a race war. Immediately. That those whites have to fight whatever non-whites exist with them. That the whites in areas where the whites are 51% and more of the population, that those whites will defeat the non-whites, regardless of who they are, that they coexist with. Then, if we looked at a map of the world as a result of that gigantic race war, then you would see the empire of the white race. There is actually a deliberate error in what I have told you. I have said there that in order for the whites to win, the whites have to be 51% or more of the population in the region. The reality is that as a result of the race wars in Africa, I can assure you that whites do not need to be 51% in order to win the war. In Rhodesia, the whites were between 4 and 5% of the population. We controlled the government, we controlled the army, we were vastly outnumbered, and we were still managing to hang on to our territory. We were killing the blacks at our peak. We were killing the blacks at a rate of 20 blacks being killed for every one white man who died. That was when we were at our peak. Wasn't always that good, but we were easily above 15 to 1, easily. The same is true for the South Africans. The Portuguese, I think the ratio wasn't that good, but even so, even with the Portuguese, I would say that as a thumb suck, the Portuguese were easily handling the blacks at a ratio of 7 to 1 without a problem. The South Africans were easily handling them at 20 to 1. And that the truth of the matter is that even if whites were to go down to being 25% of a multiracial population, that whites would still win the war. I've stated that openly to Americans, and even when I say 25%, I'm still actually erring in the favor of the enemy. I reckon 20% and the whites will still be cleaning everyone's clocks. 20%, very doable. But for the purposes of this exercise, we're just going to stick with 51%. So we're giving the enemies, our racial enemies, enormous amounts of doubt. We are skewing it massively in their favor. But the reality is, I don't really believe it. I say even at 20%, especially 25%, easily doable. There was a time many decades ago where the whites in South Africa made up 25% of the population. They ran the country like clockwork. The non-whites didn't have the slightest amount of power. They were so dominated by the whites, it wasn't true. So I can tell you, at 25%, you can do anything the hell you want still. But for the purposes of this exercise, we are going to look at the territory that whites control globally when they are more than 50% of the population. And I think you're going to be shocked and surprised by this. Now, nations, there are lots of nations that are multiracial and have been so for long. And even in Africa, where the whites were in charge politically in places like Rhodesia, places like Angola, Mozambique, Southwest Africa, South Africa, even in those places where whites were less than 50% of the population, but they dominated politically, those whites had tremendous power, and the whites were running a basically multiracial state. It was just a multiracial state where the whites set themselves up as the elite, and the whites were the political elite, the military elite. So the whites there were still running a multiracial state and not a true ethno state. And even there, the whites packed a lot of punch. Here is the first map I'll show you, just to give you a concept of the empire of the white race. This is a map that somebody drew up in 2013. And this person colored the white people as yellow, as a bright yellow, and called them Caucasian Celtics. And if you just quite take a good look at that map, you'll see that there's also Caucasian Celtic Native European. So yellow and green on this map, yellow and green depicts whites, according to this person. And you'll see that it covers all of Europe and Britain, Scandinavia. It covers North America and Australia and New Zealand. And then you'll see a chunk of South America, the bottom part of South America. But then you'll see it extends into North Africa, the Middle East, right up to India. And so that is obviously not quite right. So there are Caucasian people who are related to us, but they're not European, and they are darker skinned, and they're not directly European. So the map is generally correct, but not totally so. And also notice it moves deeply into what is Russia. So this gives you a basic starting point, but there are more accurate maps that have come since. Another thing that's racial is IQ, intelligence quotient. Here is a map of the world and it shows people by IQ, and you will see that many of the same areas where the white Europeans are, which is North America, Europe, Russia, South America, Australia, New Zealand, you'll see that the IQ of the people is basically the same. Where you'll see a difference is previously where you were looking at Caucasians in North Africa, Middle East, and India. You'll see there's a drop in IQ. So they are more mixed race. They may be somewhat Caucasian, but they're more mixed race and their IQ is lower. And by the way, look at Africa, a big glaring part of the map, And Africa is the dumbest continent on the planet. And you'll see it varies a little bit according to the presence of whites in South Africa, but otherwise, Africa is the dumb continent, the richest continent and the dumbest continent. Here is another map that somebody drew up, and this was a map of the intelligence of indigenous peoples. This is somewhat different. The main takeaway here is they are ignoring the whites of North and South America. They're ignoring the whites in Australia. Here you can see Africa, how stupid Africa is when you take the white element out of it. But what comes through clearly here is Europe. I'm not too worried about China. Don't worry about the Chinese appearing to be superhuman. I'm not worried about China. That's a topic for another day. The main thing here is that you'll see that whites of Europe, the IQ of the whites of Europe extending all the way into the Ukraine, you'll see that the whites of Europe are clever people, and you'll see Britain, Iceland, etc. Also, just want to show you some of the dysfunctionality of other peoples. This is not a particularly good map, but it's 2003. It's the hunger crisis in Africa. You can see large chunks of Africa cannot feed itself. The blacks are struggling to even feed themselves, even when they're in charge, when it's black rule. 2006, a hunger map of the world. You'll see mainly Africa, mainly large chunks of Africa, people can't feed themselves. But it also extends into Latin America, parts of the northern part of South America, and also even into Asia itself. Even China struggling to feed themselves. India, China. So just a bit of a show of the dysfunctionality of some of the other races. These are among the many reasons why whites must not lose confidence in themselves. Here's another interesting map somebody drew up, a map of skin color. So here you will see clearly the northern Europeans, Western Europeans, up to the Ukraine, into Russia. You'll see skin color. But this is I think this is an average of skin color because it shows parts of America itself as not being quite white. And yet we know that there are large numbers of whites in America, in those regions, have been in those regions. So this is an average. And this is also one of the reasons why skin color is not a really good thing here. What we're interested in are the actual whites. See a little bit in the bottom tip of South Africa, and you'll see South America also a little bit showing that it's not quite black. But I wouldn't get too hung up on skin color. What we're interested in are the chunks of areas that whites control. Now we're starting to get to the more accurate maps. Somebody drew up this one called Ethnic Groups in the World by the End of the 20th Century. And here you're starting to see more clearly the white or European race, which areas do we control? You can see again all of Europe, Northern Europe, Britain, stretching deep into Russia, stretching very deep into Russia, and only Mongoloid starting to take over halfway through. Go and look at the United States and Canada, big chunks of it totally white dominated. And even those areas where it shows not really whites, the reality is whites still contain lots of punch in those areas. Australia, you can see, New Zealand, you can see, and then that chunk of white people sitting in the south of North America, sitting in the south of South America. In South America, there's at least 100 million white people that we don't even add into the equation of our population. Yet there they are. vastly more powerful than the whites of Africa, vastly outnumbering the whites of Africa, and yet 5.5 million whites dominated the richest chunk of southern Africa. But you can see a big amount of white people sitting in the southern portion of South America. Now here's an interesting map, and this map has got a key here, and you can see Caucasian is in red. It's Caucasoid something, which I can't quite read. You will see here that whites, Caucasians, Europeans stretch from the Iberian Peninsula and Britain deep into Russia, past the Ukraine, right into central Russia, and even a tiny little line that goes all the way to the eastern end of Asia. You'll see most of America. You'll see quite a chunk of Canada showing whites. And then you'll see again the southern part of South America. And you'll even see quite clearly, he also has shown the areas where whites do not exist in Australia. So it's a pretty good map, this. This is quite an accurate one. In this one, it even shows the people of Turkey as being Caucasian, which may be true to some degree, but a very interesting one. Here is another map. This is one of the more accurate maps. What's nice about this map is that this map shows you the percentage of whites. It shows you the percentage of white people in an area. And this is important. So you can see that in the areas that are pink, in much of Africa and Asia, the areas that are pink, it's showing you that whites make up less than 1% of the population of that region. Less than 1%. And in there you will see Rhodesia, Zimbabwe, which when I was a kid, the whites dominated it. And there you can see whites at this point in time are less than 1%. You would say that there's absolutely no hope in that region. You will see that if we look at Southern Africa, you will see that South Africa, even Botswana, even Namibia, even Angola, that at this point in time, they rate the whites as being between 1% and 10%. And normally you would write whites off in that particular scenario. But I can tell you right now, where South Africans, white South Africans, are 9% of the population, I assure you, you are still far from finished. So even though those red areas, you would think whites have no power at all, and cannot even survive, I assure you it's not as bad as you think. Whites, even below 10%, can still pack a punch. I'd say when you get to 1% and less, then yes, it's pretty much game over. But still, whites pack a punch. Now look at the rest of the map. Let's go to Europe. Whites make up more than 90% of the population across Europe. It is in Britain and France that whites are between 75 and 90%. Those areas are more non-white, yet whites will still totally dominate there. Going back to my race war analogy, what I'm saying is that any area that is green, light blue, or dark blue, the whites would totally win in a race war. So that means all of Europe is safe. Going deep into Russia, whites would control those areas. And it may even be that there is a chain of whites all the way across, right to the eastern part of Russia, that if there had to be a race war, whites could dominate from the Iberian Peninsula right across through stretches of Asia. that would be the kind of area that whites could win quite easily just by using their numbers. If you go to Canada and America, you will see that whites using green, light blue, and dark blue, whites would totally dominate even the United States in a race war, totally dominate Canada. Going down to South America, there are parts of this map that the author claims has got no data. So unfortunately, it appears like Australia is not so good, but we know that the whites of Australia, whites make up 92% on the map. It says 92% of Australia is white. So Australia, New Zealand, clean cut deal, whites would dominate. Go to South America, you'll find the place where data is missing is the very place that we've seen that whites dominate. So this particular compiler of this map could not find the data, but we know from the other maps whites would dominate. However, you can see interesting chunks on this map that spread into Brazil. That in Brazil, for example, whites make up 47.7% of the population. So, on that basis, if you look at where the whites live, you will see that there is a chunk of south of the southern part of Brazil where whites make up between 50 and 75% of the population. And you'll see a little bit below them where you've got whites also in the same, where there's an even greater grouping of whites, that's probably Argentina for the little bit that's available there. But if you had to create an ethno state, that ethno state could consist of a very potent part of Brazil, the southern part of Brazil. And there's a bit of a dodgy area there, 30 to 50%, which I bet you, if whites organized themselves, they could take that piece as well. And look there at the northern part of South America and the nose of South America. There you can see that whites, as a proportion, whites are not actually in such a bad state. Even the whole of Latin America, there's a big chunk of whites sitting in Latin America, South America, that whites have a big power role in South America itself. Very potent, very potent. You could have ethno states. I think it's Chile down the left-hand side. Chile, total ethno state there, between 50 to 75% of the population. So the southern tip of South America, even extending right up into chunks of Brazil, whites, total white domination is possible there in a race war. So this is important stuff. This particular map is very important. Here's another map. This is an old map. I don't know who compiled this. This is called Categories of White World Supremacy. This has to relate to the time of colonialism. There's information on this map that I think you can't find on any other map, and therefore it is useful. The dark brown is areas of white settlement. Again, you can see Europe spreading out into the Ukraine. You can see Canada and America. And you can see Australia, New Zealand. But then it's got some interesting other categories that make for interesting reading. Take note of most of Africa, and this spreads into Asia. It says areas of white political control over colored populations. Why? Because even though whites made up a tiny, tiny, insignificant portion of the population in most of Africa and in Asia, whites actually politically controlled the political strings, military strings of those regions. The whites totally dominated Africa. Africa was a white European possession. It was a European possession in its entirety. Literally every square inch of Africa was controlled by whites. It was basically an offshoot of Europe. So it happened in the past. It can happen again. Then there's a final one, a color, which is a light color. This must have been drawn up in the time of colonialism, where you see like probably Ethiopia and chunks of Asia, where it says colored populations who are independent of white political control. And then the rest of the white areas on this map, it says uninhabited areas, but it really just means a low population. So I wouldn't say it's totally uninhabited, but it's low population levels. So this gives you some kind of idea of where whites lived and their power again. And again, going back to even Latin America and South America, you can see areas of white. There's the note of areas of white and colored populations. I'm going to quickly focus a bit on South Africa just to show you that in all of these maps, you've never seen South Africa. You've never seen the whites of Africa even feature. You've never seen them feature at all. But on this map, and you'll see the origins of this map, this is a recently done map that shows in great detail. This is part of a world map that was literally built up pixel by somebody. And what this guy shows is the areas where different population groups dominate. And in this particular map, the blue are whites. And in this map, you will see literally no whites in Zimbabwe currently, no whites in Botswana. But you will see on the west coast, which used to be German Southwest Africa, which has a low population density, you will see chunks of white settlement there. You'll see blue on the coast, and you'll even see some blue in the center of the map. So there are territories there where whites dominate small chunks of territory. If you go into South Africa itself, unfortunately, you're not aware of the population density of South Africa, but there is a very high density in the center of South Africa. There where you see a little bit of red, almost in the top middle of South Africa, that area is Johannesburg, Pretoria. There is a very, very high population density in there. However, even in that area, you will see chunks of blue. You'll see whites along the bottom of the tip of South Africa. There's a huge territory there along the coast where whites are literally a majority. There are places where there are small towns that are all white in those areas. Then you'll see up in the green areas, you'll see whites in various places. One of those blue areas is Bloemfontein, which used to be a part of a Boer Republic. The other area is Johannesburg, Pretoria, and then you'll see other chunks of whites out in farming areas. This will give you an idea of the actual distribution and concentration of whites, and that even though we do not dominate the whole territory, there are chunks of this territory, even chunks which is densely populated, where we still have large numbers of people here. So even if we couldn't control all of South Africa, we could control chunks, sizable chunks of it, if we defended those particular areas, and we could probably do some stuff there in the event of a race war. At the very minimum, these are areas we would have a large amount of power in. And I would argue that we even have more power than is inherently visible on this map. But it will give you an idea that even in a place where you'd think whites have got no power at all, if we were part of a bigger thing, we would still be able to pack some punch, and we'd be able to dominate certain areas. Areas that you might be surprised, you wouldn't think we would dominate it. This is a pretty good map. This one is where somebody has gone and basically put the sort of percentages in and tried to come up with a map of the white race. And you can see this matches pretty much what has come out of the other maps. Europe, even stupid Britain, France, and stretching deep into Russia. North America totally dominated. And then there you can see nicely again. You can see much better on this map the South American whites, large numbers of them. And there may be additional territories, big chunks of southern South America that could also come under white domination, Australia, New Zealand, etc. And if you look carefully, even small islands in the sea, and there's even seems to be a bit of a white outpost somewhere there in Latin America near Panama or so. So you're starting to look at the actual territory, starting to look at the actual territory that whites as a race could conquer as an ethnostate. And imagine if all this territory was linked together politically and militarily as a single entity or as a confederation. And those whites worked together hand in glove with each other on a racial basis. You would see we have grown, we've far outgrown our continent, our original continent. And there's big chunks of important territory. The only territory that appears to be out of the reach of whites would be Africa, but I would argue that the tip of Africa is still far from finished. Now we'll get into the most recent map that somebody compiled, and the guy's called Massaman, and I think he's half Iranian, half European, something like that. And he does a lot of YouTube stuff where he talks about race, and he talks about race in great detail. And he's gone and compiled the most comprehensive racial map in recent times, and he's compiled it in 2018. And in this map, the people that we're really interested in is the top group of people. What he calls the Northwest Eurasian, it's the blue people. And Northwest Eurasian, he's got all the various grades of them from Greek, which is dark blue, Maltese, Basque. He's got Franco. He's also created some ethnic groups of his own. He's named ethnic groups of his own. So he's got like Italic. And you'll see what he's defined as Italic. And I think he's done the most in-depth study of anybody. You'll see Anglo is a sort of light, very light blue. I forget the name of that shade. Germanic, Scandinavian. He's even got Afrikaner in there. Afrikaner. He's got Mormon. He's got Slavic. Western Slavic, Eastern Slavic. So he's done a lot of key stuff here, and I'm showing you the key to this because we're interested in dark blue up to what appears to be almost a greenish color, italic. So now we're going to look at his world map. And his world map is so detailed that the stuff that I showed you from South Africa was a zooming in into that map. You can't see the whites of South Africa in this bigger version of it, but if you zoom in on his map, he goes into unbelievable amounts of detail. He's got whites figured out everywhere. And so we're just looking at the big picture. There are many screenshots I could have taken of his entire map as you zoom into particular areas. And this, you can see bottom right, it says made by Massaman, Mason S. And this is the most complete based on modern data. And if you look at this, you will see that he's classed people like he's come up with, if you go and look at Britain, France, Germany, etc., Scandinavia, you can see same pattern as before. Whites stretching, but you'll see these whites are stretching almost into Afghanistan. You'll see them stretching across vast chunks of Russia. The only thing to remember about Russia is that Russia to the east has got a very low population density, among the lowest population density in the world. However, you'll see that even in those areas, whites are the dominant peoples. That there are some Mongol areas and so forth, but whites stretch all the way from the Iberian Peninsula in these low density areas all the way to freaking the eastern part of Asia. Whites originally, as Caucasians, are a Asian type people who moved into Europe and conquered Europe and held Europe for the last 40 to 45,000 years. So Europe is not our original homeland. We once stretched even into India, but I'm not going to go into that. But here you can see, where are we now? Where is our empire? Huge chunks of Russia would belong to us. Imagine the power of a Europe that stretches from the Iberian Peninsula all the way across. Go to Canada. It's only the Inuit up in the north where you don't see many whites there. But you can still see whites. You can see the various grades of whites. You can see that most of Canada and America, white. It's white. This is dominated by Europeans. Then he goes into South America. You can see the domination in Australia. You can see actually where the white Australians are. So you can see the tiny areas where the Aborigines live, but the vast majority of Australia, you can take it as a given. In any kind of racial conflict, the whites would totally dominate Australia. Ditto for New Zealand. These are givens. But go into South America. Look at South America. In South America, you can see the same pattern that we've seen. Whites dominating Chile, Argentina. I forget some of the country names there. And look at the whites stretching nicely into the southern part of Brazil. Then, if you look more carefully, you'll see that there are parts of northern South America and also there by the Panama Canal, where you see quite a chunk of territory where whites are dominant. So that is the most complete map, current map, showing whites. So yeah, we only make up 9% of the world's population, but so what? The rest is sitting in India, sitting in China. They would have to come and fight us in our own territories. And I'm not even going into the military aspects of this to come and start talking military movement and who would have an edge. I'm just telling you that if you live in a part of the world where you make up 50% or more of the population, doesn't matter, in a race war, the end results of that race war would be that chunk of territory that you see there. That is the area dominated by the Europeans and the descendants of the Europeans, the whites who went out and colonized. And between us all, we control enormous chunks of the world, rich chunks of the world. And we've got at least 100 million whites sitting in South America that we don't even count as part of our population, and they are part of our population. They are a definite part of us. And we should be thankful. This is why it's also wrong to attack the Portuguese and the Spaniards, because look at the end results of the Portuguese and the Spaniards. They've managed to seize for us huge chunks of territory in South America, which are dominated and controlled by whites. And if you also go to in this guy's map, It seems to me possibly the northern part of Mexico. I know there are white nationalists in Mexico. There are white nationalists all across South America. You're going to be astounded at the actual territory that is controlled and dominated or has a big percentage of our population in there. And if we had to have a proper global race war where all whites fought against everybody else, this would be the outcome. I'm telling you, this would be the outcome. If we dropped nation states and we went racial, we would control large chunks of this territory. And possibly we'd even move in on chunks of territory that wouldn't really be where we are the majority. Like parts of Russia. There's all sorts of parts of Russia that I'm sure we could dominate if we wanted to. But that'll give you an idea of the empire of the white race. And never at any time do whites ever sit and say, but we're a superpower. We are the greatest power in the world and we control enormous chunks of territory. And until just a few decades ago, we even controlled all of Africa. But we control enormous chunks of territory. Currently, we look at America and we say, America's a superpower. And America's got nuclear weapons. And just go and look at Russia. Russia's also a superpower. It's not quite the same level, but it's also got nuclear weapons and everything. And that is also in the hands of white people. You've got France and Britain with nuclear weapons. Literally all nuclear weapons on the planet, except for China and India, literally all nuclear weapons on the planet are controlled by whites. All the super high-tech military of the planet are controlled by whites. Whites never even discuss this. Whites never even look at this. Whites never even consider this. That not just do we have a physical presence, we've got a military power, we've got scientific power. The science of Europe and America is the most advanced science on the planet. In fact, the Europeans are actually taking it to ever newer levels. The Europeans, yet again, and this is why Europe is so important to us, the Europeans are moving us to the next level. If we were to say we are white people and we're going to stand together against all comers, this is the territory we would easily control, and we could probably reconquer chunks of territory that we used to rule. And I'm not even going into that. I'm just saying all the areas where we live, we'd take control, man. We would be able to control huge chunks of territory and probably more than the territory that you see here. We'd probably have enough power that we could move in and create new white territory easily, easily. And in the case of the whites of Southern Africa, I can tell you something now. If we were to move another, let's say, 4 million whites into Africa, and our population as a group, even though we are now down to 9%, which is making everybody depressed, even though we are down to 9% of the world population, remember the large part of the other population is struggling to feed itself. We don't have that problem, okay? And we are actually feeding large portions of other parts of the world, especially Africa. If we had to leave people to starve to death and we fed ourselves, we would dominate this planet, man, from A to Z. We have unbelievable untapped power that we don't even look at, we don't even reckon it, we don't even think about it. And it can be backed up economically and militarily. So that will give you just some idea. If we worked as a group, what would we control? We'd control big chunks of South America. We'd control every inch of North America. The Inuit, if we needed to get the Inuit out of the way, if we wanted to even extend into the northern part, maybe of Mexico, no problem. Move into Russia, Russians, Ukrainians, all those people are white people. Man, we are the greatest power there is. And this is the area we inhabit. And I myself would like to still make the argument, I will still make the argument of why all of Africa, south of the Sahara, should be turned into a white state, a whites-only country, actually. And you'd say, Yan, 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 you're completely insane, you're beyond mad. And I will tell you, I'm not as crazy as you think. I come from these regions, I have an understanding of how these places work. And you are missing out on the power of our race. And now everyone says, oh, we're finished. Just because a couple of Jews and rat-assed liberals and scum are telling us we're finished. No, we are still very much a viable entity. And one thing about Asia, why you shouldn't worry too much about Asia. Asia has an unbelievably high population density. The people are so, there are so many people in such a small area. They struggle to live, they struggle to look after themselves. They are such vast numbers that for them to go and extend themselves outside of Asia, like for India and China, to move beyond Asia is actually more difficult than you think. They themselves have got high tensions and big problems among themselves. The Asians as a group, for thousands of years have not been conquering anywhere. They've been sitting in the same place. They're stuck there. They've been stuck there for the last 3,000 years. They haven't expanded their territory. It is whites from Europe who are blasting out and conquering the rest of the world, while the rest of, while the Chinese and the Indians and everybody was just sitting still. The only Asians that are truly, truly of a high standard and whom I have a high regard for are the Japanese. The Japanese, maybe some of the East Asians, they are people I have a high regard for. They expanded. The Japanese expanded. The Japanese are probably the only non-white people who expanded in recent times. Under apartheid, for interest, I just want to tell you, under apartheid, when whites ruled South Africa, Chinese and Indians were classified as black, Japanese were classified as white under apartheid. We regarded Japanese as white people. The Germans were also very keen on the Japanese. I don't have a problem with the notion of Japanese being welcomed into our race. I think they're a very, very fine people. Genetically, they are probably the only people that are not truly white that I would say we should regard as racial comrades. But there could even be some ancient link there. There could be, maybe. But Japanese are the only other people with real strength and real power. And if they were our friends, they would dominate. They would dominate any problem areas of Asia. The Japanese could be fantastic allies and good friends. So that will give you some idea of the power of the white race. Don't worry about the numbers. Look at the territories. Look at the military power. Look at what would happen if there was a war. And you would see, we are far from finished. So stop saying we're dead. We're not even close to death. We haven't even started. And I would go beyond the concept of pan-European nationalism. I would go to the concept of pan-European racialism, to say that we need to create a global white ethno-state and have it as a sort of a confederal system. A confederal system works very well. America was a confederal system before they decided to cheat the Confederates. Switzerland, Belgium, very successful confederal systems. Confederal system allows the local states to have more power. Imagine a global ethno-empire that was based on a confederal system that allowed Spaniards and French and everybody else to rule their territories, but we still are bound together by a common racial goal. In other words, we see to it that as a race, we do not go downhill. As a race, we will still do what is good for the race. And that means whites in Europe helping whites in America helping the whites in Europe, all of us helping each other militarily, scientifically, economically, politically. Man, we would pack such a punch, it wouldn't be true. Most of Africa, a bunch of tin pot nations, can't even feed themselves. Easy to conquer if we needed to. Piece of cake. The notion that we're dead, we're dying, we're going to die, we have nothing, absolute garbage. I'm willing to bet you that 90% of the military power of the world is sitting in the hands of white males. Whether they're in America, whether they're in Germany and France and Britain, whether they're in Russia, whether they're in South America, I'm willing to bet you that 90% of the military power of the entire planet is in the hands of white males. And that includes Russia. So don't come and tell me that the white race is dead. The white race is far from finished. The white race is moving on. And the only problem about the white race is that we need to cut out these brother wars, stop all this nonsense, and work together as groups. And therein is a fantastic future for us. So, thank you very much for listening. We'll be chatting again soon. Take care of yourselves.